WCRI's Classical Kids Hour is sponsored in part by the Newport Music Festival with generous support from the Carter Family Charitable Trust.
This is WCRI's Classical Kids Hour. Whether you're a child, teen, young adult, or just young at heart, we hope to show you how amazing classical music is. You probably listen to classical music all the time. It's everywhere. In your favorite cartoons, TV shows, movies, video games, and so much more. During this show, you will enjoy lots and lots of wonderful classical music. Now, let's join our hosts as they get ready to take you on a musical journey into the world of classical music. Oh, we better go. I hear the orchestra getting ready for today's show.
Hello to everyone on this lovely day. I'm so excited to be here with Trevor Neal from the Newport Music Festival, who is back once again this week to bring you exciting classical music for your children's enjoyment.
Thank you, Jamie. I'm so thrilled to join you and the rest of our listeners at home as we explore the world of classical music.
I'm sure everyone at home is just as excited as we always are to get started. But first, let's thank our sponsors.
None of what we do here is possible without the generous support from the Carter Family Charitable Trust, the EJMP Fund for Philanthropy, and other generous supporters just like you. Thanks.
Now that we have thanked our very generous sponsors, Trevor, what do you have in store for us today?
Jamie, today I want to introduce our listeners to one of Leonard Bernstein's Young People's Concerts, which was single-handedly responsible for the popularization of classical music for decades.
You mean the Leonard Bernstein?
Yes, Jamie, the Leonard Bernstein. His mark on musical education for children spearheaded the desire and understanding that in order for the art form to survive, we must invest in educating our next generation of classical music lovers. It's something that proved to be essential to the art form being around today, and we still have tons of work to do. But that's enough talking for now. The maestro will be much more interesting than me. So without further ado, this is Leonard Bernstein's Young People's Concert focusing on the planets.
From Philharmonic Hall in Lincoln Center, home of the world's greatest musical events, another program of New York Philharmonic Young People's Concerts, under the musical direction of Leonard Bernstein. This special program is being brought to you by Polaroid Corporation. And here is Mr. Bernstein.
My dear young friends, this program is going to be a little different because we're going to be playing around in outer space. And I mean playing, not only in the sense of playing notes on musical instruments, but also in the sense of entertainment, playing for the sheer fun of it, enjoyment of it. Now, these days, when we think of outer space music, the first thing that pops into our heads is that well-known fanfare from 2001. Zin-zan. But that, of course, is actually the opening of Also sprach Zarathustra by Richard Strauss, which we learned about in such depth last season. And so we all know it doesn't really have anything to do with outer space anyway, except in the movies, right? You're all very educated and sophisticated. Then there's what's called sometimes spaced out music, like certain rock music and certain experimental pieces by Stockhausen, avant-garde composers like that, which really have to do with the inner spaces of the mind. But today we're going to hear a piece that does have to do with outer space, a piece by the British composer Gustav Holst, called the planets, and that's literally what it's about, the planets of our solar system. And the reason I call it music for sheer enjoyment is that it doesn't try to make any deep philosophical points, and it doesn't tell any complicated story. It doesn't try to blow your mind with new musical techniques. It's just first-class entertainment. In fact, when it was first played in Germany around 1920, some of the critics there roasted it as being nothing but Unterhaltungsmusik, which means entertainment music. Well, so what's wrong with that, especially if it's good? And if it turns out to blow your mind, which it might, well, so much the better. This is a big piece. After all, there are a lot of planets to cover, and each planet gets a whole piece of its own. And so, correspondingly, Holst uses a big orchestra, a very big one, in fact, as befits so large a subject as the solar system. He's not satisfied with the 100-odd pieces of the normal symphony orchestra. He calls for extra added instruments that are not ordinarily used, like, for instance, the bass oboe. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Let's hear a couple of notes on it. Terrific. And then he asks for a tenor tuba. And then he calls for an alto flute. Not a beauty. And also the mightiest of all instruments, the organ. Which is practically a whole orchestra in itself. And besides all that, he uses 6 horns instead of the usual 4, and he uses 2 sets of timpani instead of 1, and a whole raft of assorted percussion instruments and a lot more. Now, all this can make a terrific noise, as you can imagine, but they can also make some very spooky, whispery sounds that seem to come from light years away, as you'll soon hear. Now, it may surprise you to learn that Holst's planets, well, that's hard to say, Holst's planets, are 7 in number. That is, there are 7 movements, one devoted to each planet. Now, how come 7 when every child knows that there are 9 planets moving around the sun? Well, the answer is that at the time Holst composed this work over 50 years ago, the 9th planet, which is Pluto, had not yet been discovered. So we're down to 8. Then on top of that, he left out another planet that we consider pretty important, namely Earth, which leaves us with 7 planets: Mars, Venus, Mercury, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. But why did he leave out, of all things, our very own planet Earth? And that's an interesting question. Because the answer, of course, is that Holst wasn't at all interested in astronomy, but in astrology. I'm sure you all know the difference. Astronomy is a science, and astrology is a sort of science. We all know that in astronomy, the sun is the center of our system, and we planets all revolve around it. But in astrology, the Earth is the center, and everything else revolves around us, including the sun and the moon, which doesn't make much sense, but there you are. So out goes the planet Earth. In other words, as far as astrology is concerned, we don't count as a planet because we're not part of the visible heavens. It's not very scientific, but Holst couldn't have cared less about the scientific side of the planets. He was drawn to the mystic side of things, and for him, the planets were important as symbols in relation to the zodiac, to horoscopes, to that ancient sort of science known as astrology. I suppose today he'd be called a mysticism freak. For instance, one of his pet hobbies was drawing up horoscopes for his friends, not so much to predict the future for them as to try and get an inside look at their character and personality. And this is just what Holst did with his planets, too. He would pick on one aspect or personality of each planet and write music about it. Now, it's not that easy to pick one single aspect of any planet. Astrologers have been arguing for centuries about the real meanings and forces and influences of these strange wandering bodies. But for Holst, it was easy. He just decided what each planet meant to him and went to work and wrote them. So out comes planet number one, which is Mars, and which he subtitled The Bringer of War. Now, this music presents in amazingly realistic terms a picture of war, like this racketing of machine guns. And then there's the grinding of monstrous tanks. And the whole horrible juggernaut of the war machine, plus fanfares and marching and screaming and all the rest of it. And so here is the first planet, Mars, the bringer of war. Thank you. Maybe an exciting piece to hear, but it's not exactly what you'd call beautiful music. In fact, you might even call it ugly music. But then what is uglier than war? And this music is not so much an impression of the planet Mars with its red glow and its possibility of life, as it is an impression of Mars, the god of war after whom the planet was named. It's an inhuman piece, utterly mechanical, brutal, and relentless, just like war itself. Inhuman, brutal, relentless, and mindless. But just think a minute. If an artist sets out to depict something ugly in notes or paints or words, and if he does it well, doesn't that make beautiful art? I mean, think of the ugliness, for example, of Picasso's Guernica, the unpleasant scenes in drawings by Goya or Bosch, or the distasteful subject matter in novels by Dickens or Dostoevsky. Aren't all those beautiful works of art? So, you see, ugliness can be beautiful. Anyway, there's something for you to ponder over a hamburger sometime. But meanwhile, as an antidote to the ugliness of war, Holst brings us his second planet, Venus, the bringer of peace. Now, that's sort of a surprise because we usually think of Venus as the goddess of love. But astrologers have made her a symbol of peace by their own special brand of logic. Love equals harmony, harmony equals peace, therefore love equals peace. Simple. So here now is Venus, a very different story from Mars. This is music of great humanity, of the individual human being shown through the use of solo instruments. It's music of rich harmony and gentle movement, in short, of peace. We're going to play the next two planets together without interruption because they're short and they somehow belong together. The first one is Mercury, described by Holst as the winged messenger, which is, of course, the Roman god Mercury, and that's what he was. Swift as lightning, small and quick. And so is the music. Actually, the planet Mercury is the smallest of all of them, and being the closest to the sun, it has the shortest orbit. So naturally, it has the shortest musical run as well. But that's astronomy again, which wasn't the name of Holst's game. What he cared about was that astrologers have always described Mercury as a quick, tricky type, double dealing. Now you see him, now you don't. And Holst makes this point by writing double dealing music, so to speak. For instance, by writing in two different keys at once. Like here's one harp playing in the key of B flat major. And immediately the other harp comes in E major. Two completely different keys. And then the whole orchestra does the same thing, follows suit by alternating these two keys. And to make this two-faced point even stronger, Holst writes in two different rhythms at once. Here's a clarinet playing in 6/8 time. And against that, the bassoons are playing in 3/4 time. And together they sound like this. You hear the two rhythms together? You see what I mean by double dealing. Now, Mercury is a very elusive little creature. Oh yes, one other little trick. Since Mercury is the messenger of the gods, and astrologically in charge of messages and communications, Holst tells us this by inventing a little telegraphic passage in what seems to be Morse code. And then this is later repeated by the Glockenspiel. And even later by the timpani. I've always suspected some secret message in this music, but I've never been able to discover what it is. Maybe some Morse code expert among you out there can decipher it and let us know. Anyway, that's Mercury. And his companion is his exact opposite, Jupiter, the hugest planet of all, the master, the chief god. A Holst calls him Jupiter, the bringer of jollity. Now that seems a very small attribute to assign to so great a planet as Jupiter. The astrologers say that Jupiter brings power, wealth, high position, fatherhood, ownership, everything big. He also brings jollity. I suppose because the Romans also called their chief god Jove, this other name of Jove, from which we get our word jovial. And to Holst, that was the most important thing of all, joviality or jollity, and in the most British manner, the ho-ho jollity of Santa Claus and of John Bull, of roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. This is the most famous of all Holst's planets and contains a lot of jovial tunes you'll recognize from TV commercials and movie music and stuff like that. So now here they are together, these total opposites, little Mercury and big Jupiter, the messenger and the master, the lackey and the lord, the naughty little boy and Big Daddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
That leaves us with three remaining planets and not enough time to play them all. The next in line would be Saturn, the bringer of old age. And that seems like a good one to skip since it's long and slow and draggy. And who wants to think about old age at this moment anyway? Besides, the astrologers tell us that Saturn is a nasty planet, always making trouble for us mortals. So quickly on to the next planet, which is Uranus, and which Holst subtitles The Magician. Well, again, magic is only one astrological side to this strange planet. Uranus is supposed to control all kinds of sudden changes, reforms, inventions, revolutions, things like that. And what's so interesting to us in this revolutionary day and age is that Uranus is linked astrologically to the sign of Aquarius. And heaven knows we never stop hearing about how we've entered the age of Aquarius. But of course, Holst never saw a hare, and so as far as he was concerned, Uranus simply meant magic to him. And in his music, he makes a really entertaining picture of a magician. In fact, the music is at times suspiciously reminiscent of The Sorcerer's Apprentice. See what I mean? But that's not all there is to it by any means. This magician struts about, pulling off one surprise after another, one trick after another, and finally breaks into a grandiose, swaggering march. Say, come to think of it, that's not a bad tune for the Age of Aquarius. Hooray, hooray, the Age of Aquarius. Well, maybe not. Maybe the other one's better. Anyway, the magician has one final trick up his sleeve where the music abruptly goes soft and way out at the end, and we suddenly are in outer space. I'm sure you'll know it when we come to it. Here's Uranus, the magician. Now we have a surprise for you, and for Holst, too, if he's listening somewhere out there in the universe. Because instead of playing his final planet, Neptune, which is also long and slow, the New York Philharmonic and I propose to supply the missing planet, Pluto. You remember I told you that Pluto had not yet been discovered when Holst wrote this work, but he was still alive when it was discovered in 1930. So he had his chance to add Pluto to this work, but for reasons of his own, he didn't. Well, we're going to make up for this omission by inventing a little Pluto of our own. As you know, Pluto is the furthest planet from the Sun, and therefore the darkest and the most mysterious. Very little is known about it, except that it is dark and slow-moving with an endlessly long orbit around the Sun. It's also the bane of the astrologer's existence, because suddenly there it was in 1930, upsetting all the calculations of centuries and causing no end of confusion in the world of horoscopes. So with all this in mind, we shall now attempt to shed a little light on this dark planet by improvising a Pluto piece. And let's call it, in the manner of Holst, Pluto the Unpredictable. But there, any resemblance to Holst will end. This music will not be in Holst's style, nor in anybody's style, for that matter, because we don't know what's going to come out. As I said, it's unpredictable. We have no prearranged signals, and we here on stage are going to be just as surprised as you at the mysterious sounds we will be making. In other words, you are about to hear a piece which doesn't exist yet, and which will never be performed again, and which has never been heard, and no one's ever going to hear. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, a real spaced-out trip. And here it is, Pluto the Unpredictable.
What a consummate musical genius he was.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it, Jamie, and I hope all of you at home enjoyed it too.
Oh man, I can hardly wait to see what you bring next week. It's always a joy having you, Trevor.
And it's always a joy being here, Jamie. And thank you again to our sponsors, the Carter Family Charitable Trust, the EJMP Fund for Philanthropy, and other generous supporters just like you for your continued support to help bring programs like this into the home of our listeners week after week. Thank you.
See you next time, everyone.
Wow, that was so fun. I wonder what we'll hear next time. Thank you for listening to WCRI's Classical Kids Hour. Gotta go. The concert hall doors are about to close. See you next time.
WCRI's Classical Kids Hour is sponsored in part by the Newport Music Festival with generous support from the Carter Family Charitable Trust.